I'm Susan Carter, and I've been coordinating Downs for People since 2013. We're a very informal group, and we got together to coordinate objections to a planning application from Bristol Zoo to enable it to carry on parking on the grass on the Downs, to which people have objected for ages, and we just wanted to get it a bit more organised.
Well, hang on, because why are they having a planning application to do something they've been doing for years?
Because they've never managed to get, they could never get a permanent permission. They've had seven temporary permissions because it's quite clearly contrary to planning policy. So the councillors have never gave the zoo a permanent permission, but they equally never refused it. So the zoo kept coming back for further permissions.
Can you tell us how big the car park is, how many cars go there and whereabouts it is?
Well, it's come to an end now. There hasn't been any parking there last year and this because of COVID, and now the zoo's going to close. So it's almost come to an end, to be fair, because if the zoo reopens fully, then we have agreed that it can use the car park a bit this year and next. The temporary car park on the downs, the grass on the Downs, has been the zoo's largest car park at peak periods, and it will hold at least 700 cars. And sometimes in the past, the zoo went beyond the boundaries and probably parked up to 1,000 there.
Well, I mean, surely it's not fair to say the zoo is parking people there. People themselves are turning up and driving around on the Downs and finding somewhere to park, aren't they?
No, it was much more regulated than that. It's been the zoo's largest car park in summer. They had permission for 6 days a year in the 1960s because of the traffic chaos caused by people doing just what you say. But no, it's been a designated fenced off, roped off area for the zoo's use since the 1960s on certain days of the year. And the zoo's managed it. There's been agreements with the council and the Downs Committee about how it would be managed. And the zoo has collected money from people using it.
So how do a bunch of people get together and do this legal action? What was it? A judicial review, I think.
Yeah, we didn't ever expect to have to do that. To be able to park on the Downs, the zoo needed a licence from the Downs Committee, which manages the Downs, and also planning permission from Bristol City Council. And the Downs Committee used to, as we understood it, give just temporary permissions. And equally, as I've already explained, the council gave temporary planning permissions. The last licence that we knew about from the Downs Committee expired at the end of 2017. And ever since then, we were trying to find out what was happening about licensing the zoo car park, because the parking went on. They had planning permission until the end of 2019. But they didn't, as far as we knew, have a licence. So we put down Freedom of Information Act requests, and we found out we went to lots of Downs Committee meetings explaining how this, giving the licence to the zoo was contrary to the Downs Committee's statutory remit, and they could be challenged. But we couldn't find out if there was a licence from the end of 2017. And then in May last year, we got an amended answer to a Freedom of Information request we put down earlier, which said the zoo had been granted a 20-year licence from the beginning of January. And we had no option then. This was a licence that had been granted. It wasn't something that we could object to in a Downs Committee meeting.
Well, sorry to interrupt you, Susan, but I can't understand why licences like this are not just part of a public record. What is going on?
Well, exactly. That was our problem too. But it had been done behind closed doors, as far as we could tell. We were told about it at the end of May, and it had come into effect in January. It came out later that actually, when people had been ejected from a public meeting of the Downs Committee, a decision had been taken in July 2019 to grant a licence. But nothing, we'd been going to every meeting of the Downs Committee asking what was happening about licensing. And we weren't told till the end of May that one had been granted for 20 years. So we were left with no option if we didn't want the zoo continuing to park for 20 years on the Downs. to challenges in the courts.
I find it extraordinary that a public body like the Downs Committee can say, well, actually, here's a license for using the Downs. We're going to exclude people from the meeting.
Well, that is extraordinary. I think they did it because they regarded it as commercial in confidence. And what is also extraordinary is nothing seemed to be minuted properly. There was a very interesting meeting of the Downs Committee at the end of June, which presumably is still on the record because it was one of the ones that was recorded because COVID was in by then, where one of the Downs Committee members was explaining that this decision to grant the licence was minuted but not recorded, or vice versa, I can't remember what, but basically they couldn't find, members of the committee couldn't find a proper record of what they'd done in July 2019, but they said in court that they know that is what had happened. Well, they put in for the court case, which didn't actually quite get to court. So that's what we understand had happened.
Well, it does sound a little bit irregular. This, obviously, there are Bristol City Councillors on that committee. Who else?
It's all set out in the Downs Act of 1861. It's a statutory committee. So it consists of the Lord Mayor, which not the elected mayor for Bristol, the Lord Mayor, which is a ceremonial post held by a year by one of the councillors. The Lord Mayor chairs, and there are six other councillors. And the Master of the Merchant Venturers is also there as sort of vice chair, supported by six other merchant venturers. And you probably know that the City Council owns Durdham Down and the merchant venturers own Clifton Down. So it was the 1861 Downs Act agreed that, you know, the corporation, City Corporation, the corporation as it was then, would get on and buy more of the Downs, and the merchant venturers already owned it. And the 1861 Act sets out how the Downs are to be managed by this committee.
So who are these merchant venturers? They sound like some sort of relic of Bristol's seafaring past.
Well, you can look them up, the Society of Merchant Venturers. I wouldn't like to say exactly, I couldn't say exactly what they are, but they've got a website and they do go back way, way. They've got a charter from the 17th century, I think, but I'm not expert on how they're formed. Basically, you become a merchant venturer by invitation. And they've got they're active in quite a lot of the city's affairs. But they've got, if you look at their website, the Society of Merchant Venturers, they've got an annual report on it which explains what they get involved in, as well as the Downs.
Yeah, so they have they don't have a chairman, they have a master, which sounds a little bit peculiar.
But yeah, anyway, they do.
What about this decision then? When did you hear, and what was your reaction?
Well, we heard at the end of May, as I say, by an amended answer to a Freedom of Information Act request that we put down before. And we took us a while to try and find out what on earth was going on. And we made protests to the Downs Committee in June. And we didn't get anywhere. We weren't given a lot of information. So we decided we would go ahead with a legal challenge, and that's what we did.
Do we know how much, how much, maybe you can tell us how much you spent on the legal challenge and how much the council is going to have to pay, because the public has to pick up the bill for the Downs Committee's legal fees.
Yeah, we took action against the Downs Committee and Bristol City Council, because Bristol City Council had actually acted as the agent in giving this licence to the Downs. So the decision was taken by the Downs Committee and the licence was issued by the City Council. And they've agreed, our costs have come to 68,000, and they've agreed that they're going to pay us 65,000 of that.
But the thing is, in the whole of this, we've since heard that the zoo is closing. So in a way, haven't you been wasting your time?
No. We obviously we've not ever been anti-zoo. It's not because it's a zoo parking that we've been taking action. It's because we want to, because of we wanted to make sure that the Downs Act was upheld, which says that the Downs must remain forever open and unenclosed as a place of resort and recreation for the people of Bristol. And we thought hard. We're not anti-zoo. We said in March last year, as soon as COVID struck, we said to the zoo that we wouldn't be campaigning last year if they managed to reopen. You know, they were shut down and we weren't anti-zoo. And then COVID obviously hit them very hard, and they announced at the end of November that they were going to close. And we had to think then whether we needed to continue with our action. And we decided to continue because of the principle involved, because the Downs Committee and the City Council wouldn't accept that there was a principle here, that why we were objecting to the zoo parking is that it's an activity that's not on the Downs. And we wanted to establish the principle that the Downs can be used for parking. It's perfectly in order for the City Council to act as the Downs Committee's agent to authorise parking for people who are going to the Downs for pleasure. What they can't do, the principle we wanted to establish, they can't provide parking there for activities that aren't on the Downs. And so we wanted to establish that principle in law.
Do you think you've done that?
Yes, in the end, the City Council made us this generous offer that they'd pay our costs up to the figure that's actually come out. There was a little bit of debate about the VAT or whatever. So they offered to pay us, basically, we thought, up to £72,000, but we didn't need that much to stop us going right to court. But we got an order which makes it very clear that the Downs won't be used for parking ever for activities that's not on the Downs. We got that agreement from them in an order. So that is a legally binding document. And if they did allow parking, they would be held to be in contempt of court. So we have a firm agreement that that won't happen.
But the people in that car park were the bread and butter of the zoo. Don't you feel slightly responsible for them having to shut the doors?
No, not at all. There's no suggestion that they closed because of us. As I say, we were allowing them to park. And in the order that we've agreed, we've also allowed that they can. We've also agreed that they can carry on using that car park because they're obviously in financial difficulties at the moment. So we've agreed that for this year and next, if they actually manage to get up to being able to open, non-socially distanced, and they attract enough people, that they can carry on using that grass. There's no suggestion that we force them to close. What we were trying to do over the years was get them to introduce more sustainable transport for visitors to the zoo, not to use the Downs as a car park at peak time. And I think we're fairly clear that if the Downs Committee and the City Council hadn't just allowed them to carry on, they would have found much more acceptable solutions years and years ago. And possibly they wouldn't then have had to close because they would have built up their Wild Place establishment earlier. And kept, this was the current zoo director's strategy when he came in. He took one look at the situation and said, we should be accelerating expansion of the Wild Place, and the Clifton site should become a more sustainable enterprise. So I think that would have happened earlier if the Downs Committee and the City Council hadn't just given the zoo the easy option of carrying on parking somewhere unsuitable. They may well not have had to close.
So can Downs for People march off into the sunset now?
We hoped so. All this campaigning, is very exhausting and time consuming. So we expected to disband as soon as we established the principle that there couldn't be parking on the Downs. But we've thought about it, and we really think that we've exposed great flaws in the way that the Downs Committee has been operating. So we've written and issued news releases pressing for a review of the Downs Committee. And we're really pleased that at the meeting on Monday this week, that has been accepted. And there's going to be a review not only of the governance, you know, how the Downs Committee works, but also of what the policy is regarding the Downs and how the 1861 Act can be upheld in the face of lots of pressures on the Downs and financial problems. So we want to contribute to that review because we think we've learned a lot in the course of our campaigning and our court action about what's going wrong with how the Downs are managed at the moment.
So I imagine most of your members are immediately living on up there on the Downs. I'm talking to you from lowly old St Paul's and Stokes Croft down here at the bottom of Bristol. But do you accept members from other parts of the city who care about and use the Downs?
We're not formal enough to have membership. We put anyone who's interested on our mailing list, and we have people from all over the city who are indeed on our mailing list, who've expressed support and who keep in touch with what we're doing. But we're a very informal organisation. So certainly anyone who wants to find out what we're doing and be in touch with us, you know, we welcome them willingly. And I think one of the things that strikes one most about the Downs at the sort of peak times when we were particularly keen to stop the zoo using it is that the Downs are treasured by people from all over Bristol, and they were the people. It's easy for people like me to walk to the Downs from where I live. I'm really lucky, so it doesn't, apart from being obstructed and my, you know, and by the cars on the car park, I wasn't prevented from parking. But at peak times, the zoo was stopping people from other parts of the city who needed to drive to the Downs with their picnic things. They weren't taking just taking up the parking on the bit they did of grass, but they were really taking up a lot of the other parking too. You know, they negotiated a 5-hour parking limit with the council. So, you know, we've certainly been very conscious that at peak times it's people from all over the city who want to use the Downs. And their pleasures are diminished, as everyone's were, by there being cars all over the grass and cars queuing to go into the car park and the fumes and the traffic and all the rest of it. And they were also very directly disadvantaged by other zoo traffic on taking up parking spaces along Ladies Mile. So, you know, I hope what we're doing, I think the Downs are an amenity for all the people of Bristol, and I hope that's what we're out to protect.
Well, you may be an informal group, but I hope you won't mind me saying you punch above your weight. How do people get in touch if they're interested?
We have got a sort of website. We put out quite a lot of publicity. We're on the Crowd Justice site, but I think that's actually a very good question, because I'm feeling guilty at the moment that actually our website is not too up to speed. As I said at the beginning, we were set up really as a coordinating group, and all of us had links with one of the, you know, major organisations. It's just that if you're part of a members organisation, it's actually quite hard to get members organisations to respond rapidly, and also you need to have a program. So we were tied into big organizations rather than being open, you know, and we've just sort of carried on. So we've had links. Organizations know who we are and how to get in touch, because we're part of big amenity organizations, but it would indeed be harder for individuals to get in touch with us if they wanted to, except when we put out news releases and the media like yourselves are kind enough to publish some details.
Oh, well, have you got anything sort of as old-fashioned as an address, a phone number, or email, or anything like that?
I do obviously have an email address, yeah, but Downs for People hasn't properly got one. So, yeah, we need to think about that. And I'll send you our blog address, which people can my contact details obviously go out sometimes. But we're not really geared up to deal with lots of people, but we are, I hope, yeah, open to comments.
Well, I don't think you're going to get lots, but it'd be nice to I think you're talking about the crowdjustice.com website.
Yeah, we've been fundraising on that, but that isn't really a way to that's more for us to communicate with people. So I think you've raised a very good question about how we want to communicate with people in future, because we've been, it is a time for us to pause and take stock and think just what we are doing now, because we're obviously at a new stage, having achieved a review. So and we'll need to think how we're going to work with others generally on that, because we've achieved our main objective, which is to stop parking on the downs for activities that aren't there. But I think we need to rebrigade and think just what we are going to do in future and let people know.
Okay, Susan Carter, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.